I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. The folks at the Gateway Theater in Richmond have come up with an ingenious way to bring a little bit of theater home with you. They have limited edition paper theater kits. Hallow's Eve is illustrated by the artist Keely O'Brien, and the story is written by the Gateway's Jasmine Chen, who joins me now. These 3D kits printed on cardstock are good for kids 6 and up and encourage imagination and creativity as one puts it all together and plays with the storytelling. I'll get Ms. Chen to tell us about these kits. I read that they were a thing back in the 1800s in Europe, at operas and the sort, where you could take the show home essentially as a souvenir. Jasmine Chen is a Chinese-Canadian multidisciplinary artist who's worked across Canada with various repertory festivals, independent, regional, and outdoor theaters. I'll ask her about her role as the artistic and community producer at the Gateway and just how challenging these past few months have been for people like her in her line of work. Visit gatewaytheater.com to buy these paper theater kits. The shipping is free in Canada, and they're only available while supplies last. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Jasmine Chen. Ms. Chen, good morning.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So you're the artistic and community producer at the Gateway. How would you describe that role?
Yes, so it's a brand new role, and I think, you know, we are still kind of discovering what this role is, but certainly there has been an intention from Gateway to want to have more community engagement. So we've talked a lot about embracing our local community and kind of reaching beyond our walls to find new opportunities that we can engage with our community through the arts. So not always, you know, kind of strictly theater, which is
right,
what we're known for, but finding other creative ways to be in dialogue with our community.
And these paper theater kits are a marvelous way for the Gateway to, I guess, broaden its audience, if you will. But theater companies, you know, are challenged, and this is, you know, not just because of COVID, but audiences are getting older, and so it is important for a theater company to, say, diversify its audience, if you will.
Definitely. And I think we were in a very unique position because over the last couple years, we've been undergoing an adaptive planning process. So we were already really questioning a lot of assumptions that we might have previously held about, you know, who comes to the theater, why they come to the theater, why some people might not come to the theater. And we really felt that we needed to start thinking about other ways to reach out, so not always expecting that people will come to us just because we're doing a show. But thinking about, okay, you know, what are exciting ways that we can bring the arts into people's lives, you know, not just as, you know, a once-a-year activity or once every few months, but how does the arts actually improve people's lives? And certainly for this project, it was thinking about, you know, what is something that's currently missing from the artistic landscape, and, you know, just noticing how much of our daily activities, our social activities have moved online, and while that is so wonderful that we can connect with people at any time and across the world as well, being able to connect with people in the international community. Mm-hmm. But certainly for myself and I think for a lot of people, you know, missing some of the tangible quality of being able to connect with something hands-on.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea of bringing theater home at face value may seem odd, but, I mean, we all do that. I mean, who hasn't hummed a song or repeated a line of dialogue once they've left the theater? And then I understand, having read some of the material on it, that in Europe in the 19th century, if one went to the opera, say, they could bring back something home, like a theater paper theater kit, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was quite fun researching the history of paper theaters and how you know, originally a lot of the Victorian theaters, and this is when, you know, it was really popularized in the Victorian era, but yeah, theaters would actually use it as a marketing strategy, which I found really surprising. I wasn't expecting that, but, you know, they would commission playwrights to write little paper theater plays that were not actually plays at the theater. That's a way that they could employ playwrights. But sometimes the paper theater kits themselves were of shows that they had in their season or actors that they had within their company. So I thought that was really interesting that, you know, they actually used it as a way of advertising.
Indeed. So people can go to gatewaytheater.com and then they can order these kits, the Hallows Eve paper theater kit. This was designed by Keely O'Brien, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, Keely O'Brien is an interdisciplinary theater artist who uses a lot of her visual arts practice in her theater practice. She's also the co-founder of a theater company called Popcorn Galaxies that she runs with June Fukumura. And Keely is a Richmond-based artist, which was really important to us mm-hmm. to support someone who was in Richmond. When I was thinking of who would be the right person for this project, Keely immediately came to mind because she has a lot of experience in paper puppetry. Mm-hmm. She understands theater spaces, but she also knows what it is to interact with paper ephemera and how to kind of make those things come to life. So it was really fun collaborating with her, and she got the idea immediately and just kind of ran with it.
And so you wrote the premise to Hallows Eve, and it's the perfect time of year because we're coming up to Halloween shortly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I asked Keely, because originally when we thought of this idea, we thought, oh, okay, well, maybe we'll make it seasonal. You know, mm-hmm. maybe we'll do one for fall, winter, spring, summer. But Keely brought up a really good point, which was, you know, it's so much more fun and fulfilling to create a design based on a story mm-hmm. as opposed to just a theme of autumn. And so she really encouraged us to think about what that story might be. And when I asked her if there was a season that she felt particularly drawn to, she said, oh, I'd really love to do a spooky one, a spooky autumn theme. And so from there, I wrote just kind of a first draft of a story, and then her and I went back and forth about the characters and, oh, what could our characters end up doing? You know, where might they end up? And so she really helped me expand the different locations that they went to and the story itself. So it really was a collaboration every step of the way.
So you go to the website, you order the kit. All we really need, though, at home are scissors and glue. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, all you need is scissors, a glue stick. We recommend an X-Acto knife for adults to help score along the dotted lines. That just helps with the folding. Uh-huh. Scissors, a ruler, yeah, just anything that you have kind of around the house. And then we actually have a how-to video online, which makes it super easy to follow.
Yeah.
So every kit comes with a sheet of instructions in English and in simplified and traditional Chinese. And then on the website, there's a how-to video that just walks you through all of the steps.
And then folks are encouraged, parents are encouraged to, I guess, take pictures or video even mm-hmm. and share that online. There's a hashtag, right?
Yes, that's right. So the hashtag is MyGTPaperTheaterKit.
Yep.
And this is just our way of interacting and getting to see people playing with it at home. And because the story ends on a cliffhanger, we've encouraged people at home to create their own ending.
Yeah.
So we're really excited and curious to see what people come up with. And also, you know, for us, when we were young, and playing with paper dolls and things like that, just coming up with our own stories. So, you know, people don't even have to stick to the script. They can make up whatever stories they want.
And this must be fun for you as someone who conceived of the story to see how people will interpret it at home, right?
Oh, it's so much fun. you know, there is just that joy that comes with hearing someone else, you know, imagine your text and interpret your text. And so we actually had a student that's with our Gateway Academy. Uh-huh. She filmed herself doing the entire play and all of the voices, which was so much fun to watch her do that. And just hearing, you know, how she thinks the character sounds. Which I was amazed was actually was exactly how I imagined the voices as well. So that was really fun. And we're hoping that, you know, different siblings and parents and grandparents and grandkids will all do it together so that we can hear all of their different voices.
And they're called paper, but, I mean, they're printed on cardstock, right? So they're not flimsy or anything like that, right?
No, not at all. So we found the sturdiest cardstock you could find.
Yeah.
And so that it'll, you know, it stands up and all of the pieces fit together. And, you know, as long as you're not too rough with it, it should stand up fine on its own.
Yeah. So what else have you all at the Gateway there got planned for the fall? I mean, it must be a rough time, isn't it, with COVID and the sort. But, I mean, you know, you're still doing stuff there, right?
Yes, it's definitely an unpredictable time. It makes it very challenging to plan anything because things are changing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the fall, we had a salon series where we brought in many different artistic leaders from across the Lower Mainland to offer advice to emerging artists as well as different opportunities for emerging artists in the theater community in the Lower Mainland. So that was really wonderful. We had three different events and 8 artistic leaders who joined us over the course of a weekend to share their knowledge and their experience. And so we hope to be sharing, you know, some brilliant nuggets of advice and knowledge that they shared soon. Mm-hmm. So we've got the transcripts from all of those conversations, and we'll be releasing some of that soon. But as well, we've got something coming up for the holiday season, so people can look out for that, really drawing on the musical tradition at Gateway. I think for the last 30-something years, they've had their annual holiday musical, so people can look forward to that. That'll be available online, so there'll be more details coming for that soon.
So people should look out at gatewaytheater.com for information on that, as well as all the other activities. What have you been hearing, Jasmine, in the community there at Gateway and elsewhere about the lack of gathering in theaters and the sort and spaces? I mean, for a lot of people, it is work. So it's an inability to work, and for creative people such as yourself, it must be tough that everything's on hold.
Yeah, it's, you know, there are many heavy hearts, and there's a lot of unknown in terms of when it's going to be safe again. I mean, certainly there are theaters who are doing it, who have been really brave. I mean, certainly the Arts Club is one of the first companies, and Fire Hall as well.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that most companies are having to do a bit of a hybrid approach, that there are some in-person activities as well as online offerings. And I think everyone's very cognizant that everyone has different comfort levels, and also depending on you know, who you are in the population, if you are part of a more vulnerable population, you might not feel that going to the theater is a viable option, but we still want to make the art accessible, and so there are so many more streaming options than there ever were before. So everyone's having to really adapt and having to think about, okay, what are ways that we can still serve our community in ways that feel meaningful as well. I think, you know, we've had to really find ways to still be together, even though we aren't in person.
Right.
And what has been really encouraging is seeing how much training has become available online, skill sharing, knowledge sharing. So there are still ways that we're able to be connected with one another and be supporting one another, even if, you know, we don't have as many productions that are happening. You know, in any given production, there are so many different artisans and production people and stage management and performers. You know, it really is, every production takes a village. And I think we are really missing that. So we're all having to find creative ways to still find projects that we can work on. And so, you know, in some circumstances, that means more development. So, you know, if there is a small team that's working on something, you know, are there ways that we can support development, even if it's not, you know, going into a performance?
Right.
Yeah. And something that has been really positive that has come out of this time is, I think there's more conversations happening between regions, which I hadn't seen as much of before.
Yeah.
Also, because more performances are going online, it means that more communities are able to see it. So, you know, I'm originally from Toronto, and I love that I'm still able to see work coming out of Ontario or Quebec or Winnipeg. You know, now we're not limited by region. If we want to support our colleagues in other parts of the country, we can do that, which feels really uplifting that, you know, even though we're far away, we can still witness each other's work.
And that's the amazing thing about the arts. I'm a theater fan, but I noticed in the last, say, year or so, I hadn't gone to the theater as much. But then when one realizes that theaters are closed, you start watching something online, it's not the same thing, and then you realize how much you miss it.
Definitely. I think that something I'm also seeing is people really embracing local performances, and also what are ways that you can be within your own neighborhood. So certainly people are finding ways to perform in parks or on patios and, you know, micro performances and things like that, and really taking advantage of their most immediate neighborhood, which of course is how most theaters started.
Right.
So we're seeing, you know, the micro and the macro happening simultaneously, which is quite inspiring. You know, the porch concerts as well as the online projects that can be viewed nationally.
Yeah, so you mentioned a moment ago that you were originally from Toronto. What brought you out here, and what's kept you here? I mean, the arts can often be a volatile industry to be in. What were you seeing here that drew you to say to the Gateway?
Well, I originally came to the Gateway in 2017. Giovanni, who was the artistic director at the time, he was really trailblazing because he was thinking about the community of Richmond and how it was changing, and that the predominant language that's spoken in Richmond is Mandarin. And he invited a group of actors to come out to the Gateway to participate in a Mandarin intensive. And so I came out, and it was my first time, even though Mandarin is my mother tongue, it was my first time working professionally in Mandarin and rehearsing a play in Mandarin with a director that they had brought from Taiwan. And it was a really... it was a really beautiful experience because we were able to explore theater in a different language, and coming together with other artists who also spoke Mandarin was very exciting. That is pretty rarely seen. And there are so many conversations about diversity and inclusion in the Canadian art landscape, not just theater, but also film and television and music and in other industries. And something that I've felt has been lacking is while there's a push for more visible representation of diversity, I haven't seen a whole lot of linguistic diversity. So embracing of other languages that aren't just English. And so there's been a lot of revival of Indigenous languages, which I think is so important as we continue to learn as a nation, you know, where, how this nation was birthed and trying to decolonize. So I think part of that is also recognizing all of the different immigrant communities we have in Canada and such rich fabric in terms of all of the different languages that exist. And so, you know, much in the same way that we don't always want to see the same kind of theater, you know, it's also expanding the languages that we take in as well. That culture is also encompasses languages, of course.
Yeah.
It's so important. So to answer your question, that was quite circuitous, but that what Giovanni was doing, no one else was doing in the country. And I thought that was quite a risk that he was taking. And that was really inspiring to me. And I became really fascinated with what could be possible with what he was starting to explore out here. I came back in 2018 to do a residency at the Gateway, and I was very interested in learning about how to bridge the gap between Chinese speakers and English speakers. And so my residency project was, it was called the Gateway Language Exchange Game Show, where we actually put audience members in bilingual English and Mandarin teams, and they had to compete in different games, bilingual games, where they had to use both languages to kind of advance. And so it was really fun, you know. I think sometimes it can be really intimidating going into a space where you are the language minority, and for myself, you know, I'm in a very unique position because I was born in Canada. You know, my parents' first language is Mandarin, but my Mandarin is quite weak. English is actually my strongest language. And so there are times when I go into an all Mandarin space where I feel quite alienated. And so it can be really intimidating. And it was important for me to have that experience to remind me, oh, you know, to really put myself in someone else's shoes and imagine, oh, okay, if I was immigrating to Canada and English was my second language, like how challenging it is to navigate, you know, when you're learning a new language and having to adapt to a new culture. And so the language exchange was very much a way of making the experience less intimidating, actually using play and theater to connect with other people that you might not usually connect with, and, you know, trying to reach a common goal. And so we had a lot of fun with that, and I've kind of taken the principles of that project into the rest of my work, which is how do we use the arts to bridge these divides, to actually create bridges where we can find our common ground through art. And it really felt like there was an opportunity to continue exploring that here in Richmond, but also in Vancouver. I was very inspired by a lot of the interdisciplinary work that I was seeing happening, that there were, you know, a lot of dancers collaborating with theater folks, collaborating with film artist, and so the work that I was seeing coming out of Vancouver was so different from what I was seeing on the East Coast. And I just felt, oh, I gotta see what's going on over there and see if I can learn. And I also come from a dance background. I started in dance and then was kind of doing dance and theater simultaneously. So that's always been a really big part of my life, is integrating music and theater and dance. And so I really had a craving for that, and I was seeing that work happening here. And so I thought, oh, I got to get out there. And also, I want to be close to the ocean. So yeah. It was very alluring. And yeah. I have to say, you know, being here for a couple of years now, it hasn't worn off. I'm still very much in love with the nature, just proximity to nature,
right,
and how that informs my work. But also trying to find more of a work-life balance has been a big part of this journey.
Uh-huh.
You know, working in the arts is hard. It requires a lot of sacrifice. A big part of being an artist is figuring out how to sustain yourself,
mm-hmm.
And how to continue, you know, recharging so that you can go forward. And so for me, that a big part of that was being close to nature as well. So I'm really grateful for that.
You've illustrated, Jasmine, just how vital the arts are, how we need it now more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting back to normal, whatever that is, the arts will certainly be a big part of all of our lives again. And you know, they are obviously in these times, but
mm-hmm.
You're doing great work and important work, you and Barbara and Camilla. It's just been great talking to you today. I was going to say all the best, but I guess break a leg is probably the more appropriate thing to say.
Thank you. Yeah, I loved what you just said, and, you know, I think we do also have to acknowledge that we're living through really harrowing times, and the arts can be really healing, and I think we need that, that the arts can bring us together, especially in a time with so much political divide as well.
Indeed.
That the arts can nourish us.
Yeah. Thanks for this, yeah. Jasmine.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Visit gatewaytheater.com to buy these paper theater kits. Hallows Eve is its title. The artistic and community producer at the Gateway Theater, Jasmine Chen, joined me on the line from Richmond in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.